This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Mike Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast is SEC Football Unfiltered. Episodes available each and every week. He's on X at BTopmeyer. He has just landed in Columbus. Blake, what the heck are we going to see in Columbus tomorrow?
Well, I think we're going to get a good indication whether these two teams are the national championship front runners as they're being billed. I we're going to get a lot of overreactions, right? I mean, however Arch
Manning I've already downgraded Boise.
Well, yeah. But however Arch Manning plays, he's either going to be the Heisman Trophy winner tomorrow or he's going to be a massive bust. At least that's going to be the reaction that comes out of this. So I don't know. And I think we've talked before, like I'm really interested in seeing Julian Sand because, you know, for all the fanfare around Arch, he's one of two former five-star recruits who's going to be starting in this game.
Well, I was thinking about it in these terms. Do you take any stock of the fact that it feels like every single person alive thinks Texas is winning this game?
It's interesting because, I'm sure you've seen it, like the betting line like crazy.
Yep.
And the only thing that tells me is that, like, John Q. Fan has heard one heck of a lot more this offseason about Arch Manning than he has about Julian Sand. If you're an Ohio State fan, you know who Julian Sand is. If you're, a random person who casually follows college football in Houston, you don't know who Julian Sand is, but you've spent all offseason hearing about Arch Manning. So I that's sort of what I chalk it up to, is just an offseason filled with hype around Arch. I mean, I'm trying to remember, and I'm probably overlooking something, but like, when was the last quarterback who's been hyped to this extent? I mean,
early or just in general? Because to me, the closest thing in terms of just coverage is Johnny Football, but that's a different thing.
After Johnny Football busted out, I totally agree. But I'm thinking, like, before they'd really proven themselves, who had been covered and hyped to this extent? I mean, if we think back, Tim Tebow came in with quite a bit of fanfare, but the way his playing career developed with him winning a national championship in a spot role as a backup, I don't know. It sort of took some of it increased the hype in some ways, but I also think like the pressure was off a little bit by the time he became a starting quarterback. Like he'd already delivered a national championship in a backup role. So, but that's one that sort of comes to mind. But that was also a different world without really social media as we know it today. So I don't even think that one really compares.
Trevor was pretty hyped. Remember, he had had the who's the guy took that went Kelly Bryant.
Yeah,
remember
took Kelly? Over remember in the middle of the game?
They were rotating in that A&M game. Trevor takes over. I mean, the other thing about it though that I feel like he has been at this school for 3 years now.
Right.
Like.
Right.
I also weirdly think like. I think there's more talking about how much he's hyped up than he's actually being hyped up. You know what I mean?
Well, he's in a lot of headlines, and there's a lot of coverage. I do think you're right in that, like, in terms of what people expect out of him. I think they expect a lot, but I also think it's within reason, you know? Like, I don't think anybody's sitting around saying that this guy is going to be Joe Burrow in 2019, or maybe they are. I mean, Paul Feinbaum says he's the second coming of Tim Tebow and will be the greatest player. So there are examples of people that are really going overboard with it, sure. But I think I generally agree with you that the bar is set very, very high, but I don't know that it's set to an unattainable level, particularly when what we've seen from him is pretty good, small sample size, all that stuff, yes. But
non-competitive defenses, all that. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But what we've seen of him is good, and the pedigree counts for – I think it counts for more than something. I think the pedigree counts for a lot. Like, and this is not just like, oh, his dad was a good player. It's like, you know, as you get sometimes in college football, this is – I mean, he's from the first family of college football, you know. With
From the first family of American football.
Yeah, right, right. So this is not. It's like I'm saying. It's not the case of like, oh well, you know, somebody's pop was a good player. Like, no, this guy's whole family were good players, and his dad would have played at Ole Miss. You know, if not for a medical condition. So, you know, he's got the two uncles and the grandpa. So yeah, I mean, That's the thing when people like try to downplay the family factor or say like, well, just because he's a Manning, why does that mean he's going to be any good? And it's like, well, okay, it's not a guarantee, but that family name means as much or more than any other family name I can imagine being stitched across the back of that jersey. So, you know, when you combine that with based on what we've seen, I think there's plenty of reason to have the bar set where it is. I think the expectations. Sure, they're high, they're demanding, whatever, but I don't know that that they're unattainable because of who this guy is and the family he comes from.
Well, like the other weird thing I was thinking about is his college career actually mirrors Eli's more than it does Peyton.
Yes.
Because, you know, Peyton was while he was supposed to be a backup, he ends up playing in the first game because of injuries, and he ends up taking up that role as a true freshman. Eli went and redshirted. He sat behind Romero Miller for his freshman year, and honestly, probably to the detriment of the team. Like, honestly, that team probably could have been better with Eli. They had Deuce McAllister, they had a bunch of pros. Like, that team could have been better, but he didn't. And by the way, never became an issue, never made a fuss, and then he took over his sophomore year and, you know, had a pretty big coming out party. He was pretty good as a third-year sophomore. It actually, his career mirrors that, other than the difference is, well, Arch is playing with perhaps maybe the most talented roster that we've ever seen, but it's much more similar to that than it is to Peyton.
100% right. It is. It's the exact same career arc. Third year sophomore.
Honestly, the Mannings picked David Cutcliffe to be the Ole Miss head coach for Eli, but the difference is that the Mannings picked Sarkisian because they trust him. You know, it's the same idea.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you go back to Archie Manning, and he started as a true sophomore, and that was in a time when freshmen
could not play.
Playing, right? Yeah, so he started in his first year that he could start based off the rules. And then you're right about Peyton. Peyton goes in. He was supposed to be third string that year, but injuries to Todd Helton and Jerry Colquitt put him into duty. And Todd's dad
going, yeah, we're going to go work on the baseball swing.
right. Smartly so.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, I mean, Peyton was this Bollywood recruit, right? I mean, recruiting rankings aren't what they are today, but there were recruiting services if we think back to the Wayback Machine. And this, you know, Peyton was this really, really hyped five-star recruit. But when he took over as starter that year, Tennessee was 1-3. Like, the season had jumped the rails. The first two quarterbacks get hurt. The team.
And
you know,
he was rotating with Brandon Stewart, who was also another Ballyhooed recruit, wound up at A&M.
Right. And the team was in a bad way. And so, sure, there was pressure on him because of the name and because of his recruiting profile, but the season was already a lost cause. By the time he became the starter against Washington State, the season was a lost cause, and he saved it. Like they were 1-3 when he became the starter, and they finished 8-4 that season. And so, yeah, the Peyton situation, not really like Arch's situation. Archie's not really either. You're right with Eli's. I mean, that is the one down to a T, really, minus the fact that, you know, Eli was not stepping in to the number one ranked team in the country with a roster like this one.
No, I mean, that. I don't know. It's this weird thing where I've told Tim, because of the betting line, like, I'm going into a Saturday, and I'm not betting the game. Like, I don't really know what to expect, because on the one hand, it's like, I feel like more times than not, than when we assume things are going to happen, like, it usually goes the other way, and I think we're grossly discounting. This isn't a weak Ohio State team. This team's right. going to be absolutely stacked, as Tim has pointed out. They're probably going to have the two best players on the field, one on the offensive right. side of the ball and one on the defensive side of the ball. Also, Texas is going to have some receiver issues with injuries and whatnot. So there's a lot of mechanics here. Like, I don't know. I can just weirdly – I wonder if this game's going to kind of wind up being like everyone trying to not make a mistake. Like, I wonder if it's a punt fest.
Punt fest? Wouldn't that be something?
Well, it wasn't the Bama game when Bama hit the field goal in Austin. Wasn't that like 16-13? They played Texas before Texas came into the SEC.
Right. Yeah. Bryce Young led the field goal drive, but it was a rock fight, and Texas probably could have won that game if not for injury to Quinn Ewers at the time. Right.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Quinn and that was also the big noon kickoff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, with the betting thing, it's interesting because it's like, and you guys follow that stuff more closely than I do, but it seems anecdotally anyway, like this is not sharp action.
Yeah,
right?
That
like,
Tim spoke with Derek Stevens, who runs Circa, and he's like, we had somebody put a $500,000 bet. This isn't a sharp. This is just somebody just came in and put $500,000 on Texas.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So this is just like good Texas fans that are feeling the Arch vibes or something, I guess.
They are vibing right now. I will say that.
They are totally vibing. Yeah, I've seen it in the airports traveling to Columbus today. I mean, they're absolutely vibing, which is going to be heartbreak for them if this goes the other way on Saturday. What I'm curious to see is, like, what about Ohio State fans? Like, what if they lose? What if Ohio State loses Saturday? Is the honeymoon immediately over?
Yes.
From the national championship? I think it's gone.
You know why? Because there's this
they
weird
thing. Like Ryan Day.
Well, it's this weird thing where, like, when we decide what you are, even when you have results and it changes, like, okay, well, I guess, you got to tip your cap to them. We revert very quickly back to exactly what we thought.
That's true. And I guess for me, like, there won't really be any reverting, because I think Ryan Day, for what he's asked to do, is a really good fit for Ohio State. I think he's a good coach. I mean, he's a good recruiter. I think he hits it off with the guys usually, and his winning percentage says that he's been a great hire. So, like, I thought he was on the door. He was going to get over the threshold at some point. He did it last year. I don't think it's going to be his only national championship either. I think he's going to get another one. Heck, it might be this season. But I'm not John Q. Ohio State fan, and I think, to your point, like, the die has been cast from that fan base. On Ohio State, you know, Ohio State fans toward Ryan Day, and I think it's unfair, and I think the national championship buys him a little bit of goodwill. And is it everybody? No. I mean, oftentimes the crazies are the loudest voices, but, you know, they're not necessarily the cross-section of the fan base, but I think it's a not insignificant portion of the fan base that at the first sign of trouble, they'll be out on the guy again, which I think is just unfair to this team and what they have ahead of them, because Ohio State could lose tomorrow and be fine in the long run.
Well, I mean, at a certain level, like, that's what the money's for. Like,
that's right.
But
yeah.
The other thing I was thinking about is, go back to the Tennessee game and the Tennessee playoff game, and I think that was an interesting atmosphere, because, you know, obviously Cobb went, like, I knew Tennessee people that went, And they were like, it was a very anxious environment for Ohio State. Now, it quickly turned because, holy cow, like what an impressive beatdown that was. But I think back to, remember that game starts and it looks like Ohio State's going to go three and out, but they get bailed out by the, was it a face mask or was it targeting? It was on Howard. Remember, he got hit in the head or something. I can't remember if it was a face mask.
Right.
And but it was going to be a three and out. And I think that crowd was ready to turn. Now, I don't know if Tennessee could have done anything about it by the end of the game and what Ohio State did the rest of the way. But that's still deep inside their people.
I think so. And I covered that game. And the mood, just anecdotally from people I was around, you know, night before the game, talking locals and fans, like the mood was a little bit ominous. And I guess the only upbeat portion of it was I think Ohio State fans believed incorrectly that if they lost, well, at least they get to fire the coach. I don't know that they would have been firing the coach even if they did lose. I kind of tend to think no. But
I think they were kicking the tires.
Anyway.
I agree with you. I think they were kicking the tires of what they could do.
Yeah.
But I think they were going to reach the conclusion of he was coming back.
I think so too, but try telling a fan that on a night before the game when they're six beers deep, right?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, but there was sort of this like ominous mood floating around the city of like, they're going to lose. But like I said, the silver lining was they convinced themselves they were going to fire him, and then you know halfway through that game the mood had changed, but. For Texas fans, I mean, it's going to be a gut punch if Arch comes out and doesn't play well, right? I mean, the whole offseason belief of, Arch is going to be the one that gets Texas across the doorstep, like Ohio State's $20 million roster did last year. All that feeling and vibe goes away if this thing goes bust tomorrow.
It's why, and we're going to get to the LSU game because I think it's fascinating too. I think Saiyan's in a better spot.
I think he probably is, yeah.
He gets to be at home, but B, it's like all the attention's on this other guy. Like, there's, like, you know, if you just play fine, like, everyone's going to be going, oh, man, maybe we found our guy.
Right, yeah, and he gets to throw to Jeremiah Smith, too. So not that Arch doesn't have any talent wide receiver. But,
no, but four's a little different.
Yeah, Saiyan has the blessing of playing with what I think is the best player in college football, in Jeremiah Smith. So yeah, I mean, and that's what I keep coming back to is it feels like there's only one former five-star recruit, only one former blue chipper that's like having his coming out party tomorrow. Like that's sort of the narrative around this game. It's like no guys, actually there's two, and in fact we sort of got the soft opening from Arch Manning last season. Now this is a much, much bigger deal, no doubt about it. But we did get a little bit of the soft opening from Arch last year. Like we haven't seen Saiyan hardly at all. He barely played last season. They didn't need him. He took the red shirt. So I mean that is kind of for me, at least nationally speaking, sort of the forgotten narrative of this game is really this is the Julian Saiyan lid lifter. This was the guy that, you know, Nick Saban had decided was going to be Alabama's quarterback. Up until the point where Saban retired and Julian Saiyan changed his mind. I mean, this was a guy with a huge recruiting profile in his own right, and somehow he's flying a little bit below the radar coming into this game.
All right, we've got another big one tomorrow night. It's in Clemson. We've got the Battle of the Tigers, the Battle of Death Valley. Is that weird? Like, because I think we both all, I think all three of us agree, like, whoever loses in Columbus tomorrow, it's like, that team's probably fine. It is this weird reality of like, yeah, nothing prevents either team from losing in Clemson on Saturday and having their season be derailed. But why does it feel so much more significant of like, it feels like it's going to swing the team so much more than the other game does.
Yeah. And especially if LSU loses, because with Clemson, it's weird to say this, but it's almost a free swing for Clemson because they have this whole other avenue of getting in as the ACC's champion, basically following last year's model. I mean, they could get embarrassed in the season opener like they did last year and still get in
and lose to Louisville by 12.
Right. And still get into the playoff. I mean, I guess technically you could say that avenue exists for LSU as well, but nobody's going to think if LSU loses to Clemson, that they're going to win the SEC just because of the landmines on their schedule and what that would signify. You know, if you can't beat Clemson, as good as Clemson is, the idea, the belief is going to be, well, you're not going to win the SEC championship, and so you're behind the eight ball a little bit. But yeah, but for Clemson, it's a little bit more of a free swing because of their path to playoff through the ACC. But it does feel like the stakes of that game are higher than Texas Ohio State, and I do think it's especially because of LSU. You know, with knowing that they've lost their last three season openers under Brian Kelly, lost final season opener I believe under Ed Orgeron. So it's been a minute since LSU won a season opener. All the focus this offseason for LSU was starting the season differently, and they made that huge offseason investment. You know, they brought in what I think is probably the best transfer class in the country, and it's like now it's time to see if that money was well spent. And if they come out tomorrow night and don't look much different than they did last year, then it's like, okay, the boosters spent all that money to do what? Go 9-4 again? Because I really think when I look at this team, I don't see why we shouldn't think LSU can win the national championship, right? Like, they have the quarterback, they have the coach. I know it's in vogue to make fun of Brian Kelly, but the guy is a high-level winner. He's been to the national championship game. So they have the quarterback, they have the coach, and now I think after the transfer haul, they have the roster to go pursue a national championship. And so if that doesn't look the part tomorrow night, then I think it does get to be a little bit panic mode around LSU. That doesn't mean they're going to fire Brian Kelly in September of this year, but I do think at this point in year four, if this doesn't work this year, I think it's time for LSU to start having some serious internal dialogue around why isn't this working, and can it work? Because if it doesn't work this year, I'm probably going to pivot to the idea that it's not going to work for Brian Kelly at LSU. Now, I'm not there yet. I actually think it is going to work this year. I think LSU is going to make the playoff with this team. But if they don't, I mean, you have to start asking hard questions at that point.
Well, I think there's this weird dynamic at play. So I'm not saying I believe this, but I would make the argument as such when you ask, well, why not? So originally Kelly came in and used the money on high school guys and keeping high school guys.
Yeah.
And I think that was an effective strategy. Well, that meant that they wound up playing a lot of young guys. And I mean, how many press conferences do we watch with Brian Kelly just like pounding the table, theatrically about, I can't get the young guys to do what I want them to do. And so then this year they quickly pivot to, all right, let's do what Ole Miss did. Let's go buy the defensive guys that we need. The argument that I would make is I'm not sure the portal had the difference makers this year that it did last year.
Yeah, that might be true. I don't know that this LSU portal haul is as good. I don't think it's as good as Ole Miss's portal haul from a year ago. I do think I think we're kind of saying the same thing here. As compared to their peers this offseason, I think LSU did it as well as they could have. But I think if you look back at what Ole Miss brought in the year before, it was probably better.
Nolan and Princely alone that's the thing. Walter Nolan had the reputation of being a guy that, hey, he doesn't play hard and whatnot, and was that A&M spin? I don't know. Ole Miss certainly got the most out of him because that guy was an absolute animal, and Princely was, all the floor people were like, we were better at defensive end. I don't know. Like that, some of this can be, oftentimes you take guys that some people think are disappointing, but if you can get the best out of them, well, then it hit.
Yeah, and the other thing is, LSU, we're not talking about how they have to go from 6-6 to be a playoff team, right? And they were 9-4 last year, so the question is this group enough to get them over the hump to being in the mix? And I think it should be. Whether it is or not, I don't know. But I think it should be good enough to transform a 9-4 team into a playoff team. Now, Garrett Nussmeier has to get a little better too. And I know, we've talked kind of at length about Nussmeier because I think he's really talented. I understand all the high ratings for him. I get, I kind of fall in love with his arm too, but
he throws a very pretty spiral. It spins a lot.
He throws a great spiral, but sometimes the defense seems to know where that spiral is going to be.
A lot of times,
right?
They do.
Yeah. So I think he has to get better too. And that's what I'm waiting to see. Like, have we seen the best out of Garrett Nussmeier? Because if we have, then LSU's not winning the national championship this year. If last year was as good as it gets for Garrett Nussmeier, this portal class might be enough to get them to the playoff, but they're not winning the national title. But if Garrett Nussmeier has a higher gear, if he can shake off some of that telegraphing with his eyes, which I don't know whether he can or he can't, but if there is a higher level for him, then not only do I think this could be a playoff team, I think it could be a national championship contender. He's going to have great wide receivers to throw to. I mean, if we're ranking wide receiver classes, I would put LSU's probably in the top five nationally. And I do think, although there is not a Walter Nolan in this transfer class, I think the collection of defensive talent that they brought in is some pretty good four-star dudes in that group. Like, and that defense had to get better. I mean, the last few years, that just looked nothing like what an LSU defense should look like. And so they had to get better, and I think they got some better dudes on that side of the ball.
What's the third best game of the weekend?
Oh, man, that great question, because there's a lot in that tier. Best game, most interesting game, it kind of made
all right,
a difference.
I'll set the standard this way.
Notre Dame, Miami?
I'll rephrase it this way. You only, of the games that you're not covering, you only get to watch one. What are you tuning into?
I mean, just for the theatrics of it all, probably Belichick. But I think Notre Dame Miami is the game that means the most, because we're going to learn a lot in that one too. I mean, Notre Dame has a schedule that's interesting. I mean, there's not a lot of there's no group of five cupcakes on there unless Boise State winds up being a cupcake. Yeah.
Yeah.
Might be rethinking that one. Right. But there's also,
I said this, my overreaction was like, I was just watching that game. I was like, maybe Ashton Jeanty was just like the best. Like he was literally like the best running back we've seen in like 25 years.
Yeah. Although Boise State also spent like three quarters squandering opportunities. Yeah, but you know, Notre Dame's interesting because they don't have a ton of showcase opportunities. It's really the first 2 weeks, and then depending on what Southern Cal becomes. But you know, their showcase games are coming out of the chute here. And then you know, I think this is going to be pretty telling on Miami too, and the Carson Beck show. So that one, in terms of the playoff race, I think is pretty huge, and it's you know, it's sort of the undercard, but is a pretty delicious undercard. But you know, from a pure entertainment value, I got to admit, I'm kind of fascinated to see what this North Carolina thing looks like, because it has been covered like a five-alarm fire throughout the entire offseason. And I don't know, maybe I'm being an underreactionist, but it's like, I mean, guys, like, okay, so he's got, you know, a good-looking, much younger girlfriend.
Hold on, the rich old guy has a young girlfriend that's attractive?
Yeah, breaking, right? Put it in 80-point typeface across the front page. Like, I don't know. Like, I sort of had the opposite reaction of a lot of my colleagues, which is just sort of shrugging my shoulders. And it's like, okay, so he's got a younger, good-looking girlfriend, and she's maybe a little more involved in his persona than she should be. But, like, is that going to matter on Monday night? I don't think it's going to. But I don't know. This old Belichick thing, I could see it being decent. Like, I could see it being what North Carolina needs in the way that Dion was what Colorado needed. I could also see it being a bust. And so
Dave Wanstead at Pitt.
Right. Yeah. the theatrics of it all, I would probably choose that one. In terms of playoff implications, yeah, Miami and Notre Dame is pretty huge.
All right, we'll wrap here. How fascinated are you by what's happening in Waco tonight?
Oh, that's another good one.
Like, to me, like, that's the ultimate undercard. This is like a bunch of cruiserweights that you don't know, but somebody's going to be doing flips off the top rope. Here comes Kidman.
That one is awesome. Like, if I could have picked one other game, I think, to cover, well, I would have loved to have been at LSU Clemson. But seeing as I can't be in two places at once on the same day, if I were to pick one from another day to cover, that might have been it, because I've picked Baylor as sort of one of my sleeper teams for the playoff. I'm not sure how much of a sleeper it is, just because the Big 12, there's like seven or eight different teams.
I think if you're in the top half, like, you've got as much of a chance as anybody else.
All right, and I think they are in the top half. They finished last year winning six straight Big 12 games at the close before losing their bowl game. So I think you know, that tells me a lot whether they're truly, you know, a contender in the Big 12. Not that they can't do the Clemson thing and lose their opener and still win the conference, but this will be a little bit revealing on Baylor. But I think, you know, the Auburn storylines and the Hugh Freeze storylines are massive, right? If they come out and win, it's like, all right, you know, everybody spent the offseason panicking about Hugh's golf game, but it's not that big a deal. But if they lose, it's like fire up the buyout machine and get the hot boards going. It's going to trigger. I mean, the Panicians and the alarmists are going to be coming out of the woodwork on the plains if Baylor beats Auburn on tonight. So you're right. I mean, that one, boy, as far as Friday night games go, that one's awesome. And then you get Colorado, Georgia Tech mixed in there, which is not insignificant either, because Georgia Tech is sort of a trendy sleeper pick for the playoffs. So, I mean, all told, and maybe I'm just being a victim of the moment here, but this is as good of a week one lineup as I can remember in some time. Cause we have the three top 10 matchups, but the undercard of the whole thing is just filled with amazing narratives and really important games as far as the playoff race goes, even after you get past those top 10 matchups.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team, rep your city, rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.